You are listening to Right Back At Ya, the Noughties pop music podcast with myself, second lead vocalist Joel Babington, and Destiny's long-lost child, so lost they demanded a DNA test, David Lim.
Hello. Everyone. J Babs.
DL. How are you, David?
I'm very good, Joel. Very good to chat with you.
It's so easy to say we're good on this podcast, but right now we're allowed to feel meh if we want to, you know, and I'm okay. I'm happy to say that, but I am looking forward to this piece of joy in my life and I'm really excited to spend what will probably be a few hours with you.
The thing is that when people listen to our episodes, it always seemed, I don't know for you guys, but like it seems like it's really tight and really compact, but the recording process, I swear the raw files are like twice the amount of what ends up in the final edit. But it's always a joy. Mm. I'm going to be on my feet for the next few hours.
Oh, you lucky bastard.
I don't have... Well, we're like in the complete opposite setup because you're very
cramped.
Snugly cramped into your closet.
I'm sweating like a bitch in this closet already. We're going to need to take a lot of breaks.
Darling, you need to move the fur coats to one corner.
Yeah, I'm sweating in here. I got pins and needles already. We've not even started. So I've got a like sports water bottle for water because you've got to stay hydrated during this. And then I've just got a big mug. Fantastic uncle, you know.
Oh, that is you. I do think of you as my fantastic uncle.
Thank you. if I was single, Grindr profile. sorry, Mum. Don't ask me what that means. And I thought, well, this is a big mug and then I'll just half fill the wine at a time and fingers crossed. I'm drinking white, so if I spill it, I spill it. So... Oh, we should read a 5-star review. David, take it away.
So guys, once again, thank you so much for continuing to share Right Back At You with your friends and with your pop-loving mates. So this is from Amy P14. Late to the party on this podcast, but started it and binging my way through. David and Joel's passion for pop shines bright in this podcast. It's so much fun. I feel like I'm learning whilst taking a trip down memory lane. Their laughter is infectious. And this series will make you smile and bring joy into your life. God, I feel like,
I'm going to have that on my tombstone.
That needs to be on the tombstone. Highly recommend for all pop music fans out there, Amy says. So thank you very much. And if you'd like to leave a comment or a 5-star review, you can do so on whatever platform you're listening to.
And we might read it out soon. That was gorgeous. Thank you so much, Amy. So today on Right Back At You, we are going to cover a pop R&B legend. Now, she started her career as a girl band with many members. They whittled it down to 4 and they went from a band called Girls' Time to Destiny's Child.
Ooh.
We don't need to tell you who Destiny's Child are. They are monumentally one of the biggest girl bands of all time. Today, we are covering the solo work of Miss Kelly Rowland. Now, David, I know she's one of your absolute faves, and I just want to say she was a very new but important addition to our Excel spreadsheet.
I have always been a big, big Kelly Rowland fan, like from the get-go.
You are a Kelly Rowland stan.
I was an original Rowland Stone, let me tell you that, even before that term was coined. So, you know, Kelly came to mind because me and my friends, we were talking about how great it would have been and how much we were looking forward to seeing Kelly headline Birmingham Pride, which would have been in May this year. And I believe that was going to be her first UK Pride headlining slot. So we were like just getting hyped and thinking, oh my God, how many bops and bangers has Kelly served over the years? She is a flexible, versatile queen. You know, she's queen of R&B, she's queen of the clubs, the versatility, the range, the talent, the beauty, the grace, the charisma, the, you know, the X factor years. Like, she is a household name here in the UK. So I kind of thought, we need to big up Kelly Rowland. It is time.
It is time. And I think she's already been confirmed to headline next year, Birmingham Pride. So We got to get there.
This July, as it happens, marks 18 years since Kelly made her big solo debut on Dilemma with Nelly. So it's been 18 years of Kelly Rowland, the solo artiste. As one of the founding members of Destiny's Child, she has sold over 60 million records worldwide. As a solo artist, she has sold over 30 million. She has 3 Grammys with Destiny's Child and 1 solo Grammy with Dilemma. As a solo artist, including features, Kelly Rowland has clocked up 13 UK top 20 hits. She has 5 Billboard Hot 100 top 30 hits, including a number one smash that spent 10 weeks on top of the charts. Kelly has had 4 solo albums to date, and today we're focusing on the first 2 eras, the Simply Deep and the Miss Kelly era.
That we are, and there's some movie appearances along the way. There's some songs that are brand new to me, so we'll see about that. I'm sure none of this was new to you as a Kelly Rowland Stone, is that what you called it?
Have you never heard her call her fans the Rolling Stones?
No, but now I am a Rolling Stone, so thank you for that. I'm so looking forward to celebrating Kelly and all her endeavours. There was a recent article that ranked girl band members and Kelly Rowland was so high up on there. I think it was in The Guardian or The Independent or somewhere like that.
Wasn't Mutia Buena number one or something?
I think she was definitely in the top 10, but yeah, in the high end of the top 10. If we are nothing, we are here to give people the respect they are due. So let's go all the way to the year 2000. Kelly Rowland features on a song I didn't know about until today, Separated, Avant featuring Kelly Rowland.
I don't know what you're calling for, so don't you come trying to kick down my door. Everything is mine to keep, money, car, crib, my kid, everything.
Everything, but my boy, you can have it, I don't care.
Like, this is new information to me as well, to a certain degree. I've read it somewhere, I think, on Wikipedia, but I don't think I've ever heard this single, and let alone seen the video until you sent me the link.
It's so cute to see Kelly in the year 2000, just in that, like, she does look very early Destiny's Child still.
There might have still been in the Writings on the Wall era. So for her to be requested to be a featured artist is a big deal.
And imagine that. Imagine how scary it is to be so used to being in like a formation band, to taking a step out on your own for the first time. You wouldn't even know how to stand.
Yeah, exactly. But I've never even heard of this guy. No offense to Avant, but it felt like quite a low pressure project to lend your name and your voice to. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. No pressure.
Yeah, but it did go to number 23 on the US Billboard Hot 100 and number 1 on the US Hot R&B and Hip Hop Songs. So,
wow.
That is pretty cool. And I was listening to a podcast the other day and they didn't know who Kathy Dennis was, so that might be us now talking about Avant. I was literally screaming at the podcast. Anyway, that's a little soft intro to Calendria, if you will. And cutting to summer 2002... it is all about to kick off in a really big way.
I remember 2002 and this particular period for Destiny's Child so vividly because this was probably in my peak fandom. We were coming off the back of a massive third album for the girls, Survivor. And I just remember like it just being so relentless. Joel, if you can recall, they had the album Survivor. They had a Christmas album, they had a remix album. You know, they were doing a world tour. And then suddenly it was like, okay, we're going to take a break and we're going to focus on solo projects. And like, even from the second they said those words, like there wasn't even a breather, like stuff was already lined up.
Mm.
Because Matthew Knowles was still the group's manager and the girls' individual manager at the time. His kind of strategy for it was that none of their projects to overlap or go up against each other. So it was going to be staggered out. So the plan was for Michelle to go first and then maybe Beyonce and then Kelly, etc. So March 2002, the girls was getting ready to put a pause on Destiny's Child. But before they do that, they release This Is The Remix, a remix album.
Mm-hmm.
And on there, like literally on the final track, was Michelle Williams's debut solo single, Heard a Word.
Amazing. And was that a remix of that, or it was just the single version?
No, it was so funny because you're going through like, all these house and like R&B hip hop remixes, and then suddenly it was a gospel ballad at the end.
Amazing.
But why not? Like, that's a way of
why not
letting people know, hey, this is what's to come, you know, signposting. And I fucking went out and bought Michelle Williams's debut solo album. And in fact, I have all her solo albums. So, but that just shows how quickly it was. March, remix album. April, Michelle solo album. And then June, Beyoncé's first solo single, Work It Out, on the Austin Powers Gold Member soundtrack. She was part of the movie as well, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then comes July, Kelly debuts with her big solo moment.
Exactly. And Work It Out was due to be the lead single from Beyoncé's album, due to come out later that year. And then Kelly came out with Dilemma. And things got changed and
shook it threw
up
a spanner in the works in the best possible way.
In the best possible way.
Tell me, mom, what's it gonna be? She said,
you don't know what you mean to
come
me.
On.
So, Nelly had already interacted and worked with Destiny's Child when they all did the TRL tour together, with Destiny's Child headlining. Nelly was on there. You know who else was on there, David?
Oh, your girl?
My girl, Jessica Ann Simpson. My other girls, 3LW, which we did an episode on. Go back and listen to it. And I believe Eve was on there, but don't quote me on that if she wasn't.
I think Eve was on there as well. And another girl group that we've sort of touched on before, Dream.
Oh, of course. How could I forget Dream was on there? Adore Dream. Shout out to Dream. So Nelly had Kelly in mind for this song. And this song was a monumental hit.
I remember thinking at the time how drastic it was, because bear in mind this was the second single from Nellyville, and Nelly had, this was peak Nelly, guys. Like, if you can remember, Hot in Here was massive. Like, everyone,
it was hot
at school, was obsessed with Hot in Here. And then next thing we knew, he was coming out with a ballad. Like, literally no one could have predicted, and no one saw this coming, and neither did the record company, because this song started getting radio editions months and months before it was even considered to be a second single. It was actually because of how much love it was getting on the radio stations that they decided to make it the second single.
Wow.
Within a month of this song being added on radios, it reached the top 10 of the Billboard Hot 100, just purely on airplay alone. Like, it was not being sent out as a single as yet.
Wowzers. I just want to say, I was sort of really into this, and I tried to do the Nelly plaster on my face. Bearing in mind, I was 10, or younger than 10. No, I was 10, and I thought I tried to do the Nelly plaster. It didn't work.
What did your mum say when you turned up with this little white patch on your face?
It was just like a nude plaster. I don't have a white bit of tape. So I thought I was really cool, but I did it for like one day or half a day. I think I may have even gone to school with it on. No, didn't work. Didn't work. But we live, we learn, and we grow, David, don't we? We got to take these fashion risks.
This is still like kind of, if you loved Kelly's look in the Survivor era.
We've got the iconic red streaks, but it is shorter. We've not got the bob, which we're going to have for the next year or so.
It's really cute and very signature Kelly. Like, I remember this hair color so vividly because I was like, no other pop girl is looking as cool as Kelly Rowland.
No, it's so iconic. And the bob that we're going to get to in a bit is so iconic. It's just the level of commitment. These red streaks were kept and like grown with. And I mean, it works. So of course you would.
We're going to talk about the styling in a second, but, you know, Tina Knowles did what she had to do at this point, and I am just loving it.
Do you think she was
it.
Still on the books for Kelly's solo career?
She was, actually. I think she was a stylist for the first album. I think Tina Knowles probably was the stylist for all three girls' first solo albums.
That is mad.
Because I definitely remember seeing Tina's name in Michelle's album booklet credits. So Tina was working hard at this point. I mean, think of the amount of outfits she had to go through. But she knows the girls.
The endless nights at the sewing machine.
House of Darion was popping off.
So this was a huge success. And they create this wonderful and iconic music video for it.
It's a proper big production music video, isn't it?
It is gorgeous. And it's very cinematic. The icon, Patti LaBelle, is in this video as Kelly's mamère. We can't talk about this song without talking about the Excel spreadsheet on the phone.
Oh, my God. Several, many years later, in an interview, someone asked Kelly about it. And she said she doesn't know what an Excel is. You know, she was just doing what she was told to do in that video, wasn't she? And
yeah,
why would fucking Kelly Rowland know what an Excel spreadsheet is? She's never had to fucking use Excel in her life, has she?
Exactly.
She's not a regular folk like us that's done an office job, you know, temping one summer, doing data entry. Like, Kelly Rowland's never had to do that. Her first job was Destiny's Child. End off.
And do you feel like, I don't know if it's ever to you, David, it happens to you in the work life, but does, you know, sometimes like in-house work training comes up and you always go, I'll do an Excel course if there's one.
Do you know what would be really funny? If, like, say Microsoft Excel decides to have a rebrand or relaunch or something, I don't know what Excel's doing with their lives, but they chose Kelly to be the face of a campaign, wouldn't that be amazing?
That would be so good.
Oh my God. Do you know, like, how Anna Wintour's doing these, like, masterclasses and Christina Aguilera is doing a masterclass on singing? Kelly can do a masterclass on spreadsheets.
Wow.
Every HR gay would put that on for their training sessions.
Take it away, Kel. So, as we've been saying, this song was a monumental success. It's literally, you look at the stats, it's like, pick a country and I'll tell you how well it did there. But in all our regular mentioned countries, David, this was a huge number one in the UK, Ireland, Scotland, Australia and US.
Very, very iconic. It was obviously number one on the Billboard Hot 100 for 10 weeks.
And also just like, as a kid, that A, wasn't cool and B, loved pop music, apart from, you know, my few weeks when I was into Kelly Osbourne and Avril Lavigne and I was a grunger. Best fortnight of my life. apart from that, obviously I was not a cool kid at all. And loving this song made me think I was so cool.
You had something in common with the cool kids? Because I felt that way as well. Like, because all the cool boys at school had Nelly's album or, you know, downloaded it illegally or something. But then I was like, oh, I also like Nelly, but only the song with Kelly. Kelly Rowland was doing something for the gays back then. She was like, okay, I'm going to help you guys out, you know, give you a conversation starter for the hets, you know.
Yeah, this song, I guess, yeah, really does sort of bridge the gap for everyone, you know.
The girls, the gays, the boys.
The gays, the straight boys, yeah. Everyone. I mean, they didn't, I'm sure they didn't even know what they were doing with that and they did it.
You know what, Kelly and Nelly? You don't know what you did for me.
For the girls, the gays and the straights. So due to this being a huge success, they swapped out the order of Destiny's Child solo albums. So Michelle had already had a solo release. Beyoncé was due to be next with her album. And then Kelly would be the third solo album release. But due to this being such a huge success and, you know, Beyoncé's single doing well, but not this kind of well, Kelly's album got pushed forward and she only had 3 weeks to record this album. And Beyoncé's got pushed back to the next year and Work It Out was not the lead single of this album. It ended up being Crazy in Love, the monumental single that we all know and love now. Now, before we talk about the next steps for Kelly and everything, I just want to ask you, David, how different do you think Beyoncé's first album would have been? Because I think this probably worked in the advantage of Beyoncé because it obviously gave her more time to create this album. Because if you think of the album, they were all such moments and huge. So what do you think it made a huge difference to her debut album?
I think it made a massive impact on Beyoncé's debut solo album because I think initially the label was planning on Naughty Girl being the lead single. And I think if she had come out with Naughty Girl as the kind of big, hey, here I am moment, I don't know if it would have had the same impact as Crazy in Love, but I think because Kelly had to go first with her solo album, that bought Beyonce a bit more time. Mm. And I think Crazy in Love sort of came from a later session.
Mm.
So that really had a huge impact. But, you know, everything was meant to happen for what it was. You know, I think this was the moment for Kelly to go for the solo album. I know it's like kind of crap to rush release and rush record an album, but Dilemma was so hot. Like
Strike while it's hot.
Exactly. And, you know, at that time, Kelly had already started recording some stuff for her album. She was still figuring out the direction, but I remember reading in interviews that they were saying, oh, Michelle's going to go gospel, Beyonce's going to do more R&B, and Kelly's going to do rock. And I remember, like, as a teenager reading these interviews, I was like, Kelly Rowland, rock? Like, that's too far. Like, I was thinking Limp Bizkit. I was thinking Linkin Park. Like, Kelly doing
just
rock?
Just, like, coming out with, like, a scream, some Kelly, I can handle this. I mean, there's different stories going around. One is that she hadn't started recording anything. So she had 3 weeks to turn around an album, and the majority of them had to be picked from demos that were already circulating in Sony. And if that's the case, I think, come on, Matthew, you're better than that.
I think recording stuff in a rush feels like a very Destiny's Child norm. Like, I just watched an old interview today with the girls, and they said the Survivor album was put together in 16 days.
Isn't that wild? Hell.
But you think about, like, our faves, like Spice Girls with Spice World. You know, the movie was put together in 2 weeks, and the album was recorded while they were filming. So, you know, crazy things happen like that back in the day, I guess. You know, nowadays, an album is so, like, it's such a big commitment and such a big venture that I think a lot of our current faves want to take their time in building a good body of work. They don't want to rush it.
Yeah, I guess there's also, like, keep up with momentum, because you can have the luxury of too much time can be a disadvantage in a way.
Mm.
So let's talk about Stole, the debut single of Kelly Rowland. When you look back at the year 2002, though, this song feels very similar to kind of like what Pink was doing with storytelling wise and Christina Aguilera with her Stripped album.
Mm.
Kind of like the imagery of Beautiful, and then what some of the other songs on Stripped are like. And, you know, Pink's got Family Portrait and everything. It is also what people were feeling at the time. And also, the really sad thing is, have we moved on 20 years later?
Yeah, this is a song and video that sadly still resonates so deeply with what's happening currently in the world. The first time I heard Stole was actually when I watched a music video, which is the most impactful way you can receive this song, because I teared up the first time I watched this music video, and I thought, oh my God, I can't believe Kelly has gone from doing something so sweet and lovely like Dilemma to a real message song. Like, good on her.
Well, it's mad to just to think of, like, how prepared for this kind of stuff we were as kids, because, you know, we weren't oblivious to everything that was going on in the world. So on one hand, you think, isn't this mad that this is for the CD UK Top of the Pop Smash Hits audience? But on the other hand, as a kid that was 10 years old at the time, you ran with it. It was kind of like shocking realisation when you were like, oh my God, like when you realised what Kelly Rowland's singing about. But on the other hand, it makes a lot of sense.
I think it was really cool that she was using her platform to talk about issues that spoke directly to her audience. Because I think, you know, we were her audience at the time. You were 10, I was in high school. You know, that is her demographic. And these were things that she knew her listeners were going through or experiencing firsthand. So I think shout out to her. Like, I cannot give her props enough for taking that risk.
Mm.
And I think it made a lot of critics sit up and go, oh, okay, Kelly, wow.
And I think that a lot of people are going to be excited to see this, because it's just reality, you know, in a video. I know sometimes a lot of people try to stay away from it, but this is true. It's what happens. Like, everyday kids go through things like peer pressure and feeling smart, and then kids telling you that it's not cool, so you just don't know what to do, so you drive yourself crazy thinking about it. And you, like, you have girls who are pregnant, and they have teenage pregnancies, and they don't know what to do.
Just before we leave the music video, just have to say, Joel, I don't know if you know this, but the high school they filmed Stole in LA is the same one that was used in Ariana Grande's Thank You Next video.
Oh, wow. Okay. I wonder what else is shot there.
Imagine if you were a student at that school, like, you're just walking down the hallways. You're like, oh my God.
Legends have been here. Amazing. Yeah. Well, I was meant to be going to LA this year, wasn't I? And we were going to go to the school that Buffy and Beverly Hills 90210 was shot at, but
yes,
let's talk about this song. Did you know this song charted twice in the UK, David?
No, wow.
So at the end of the year 2002, it charted at 57, and then in February 2003, when it was officially released as a single, it charted at number 2. Isn't that incredible?
Oh, I did not know that. I thought it was actually in 2002 when it reached the peak.
But yeah, at the end of 2002, you can go on the official charts and fact check me, it peaked at 57. So that's incredible. Peaked at number 2 in your homeland, Australia, and peaked at 27 in the US.
So next comes, in October 2002, Kelly Rowland's debut solo album, Simply Deep.
Right. This, I'm just going to say, this album was huge here in the UK, from my memory of it anyway. Absolutely huge. Well, my sister had this album, so I had it growing up. The album itself, it's kind of Dido-y, and that's coming from someone that's never listened to Dido, so I might be completely wrong. And also kind of Natasha Bedingfield-y.
Yeah, it's very Kelly Rowland does a Natalie Imbruglia album, but from her own definition in her mind when she was promoting Simply Deep, she was describing it as a little weird fusion of a bit of Sade with rock. So I was like, okay, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it was kind of like adult contemporary for a teen audience. Gorgeous cover. Do you think this was shot during the Dilemma video? Because she has the shorter hair on the cover.
A lot of the outfits look very similar. We're seeing, you know, the kind of short denim skirts with the boots and the quirky hats, the sexy tops. Like, it feels very, you know, knowing how rushed the timeline was now for this era, I would not be surprised if it was all done at the same time. But she looks gorgeous. And that blue top looks beautiful with the red hair. So
stunning.
Her looking into the mirror is very, like, reflections, Simply Deep.
Now, what were your initial thoughts on the album as the OG Roland Stoner?
When this album came out, I wasn't very motivated. That's a reference for all you Rolling Stones out there. I wasn't very motivated to go get it because I liked Stole and I loved Dilemma, but I was kind of like, okay, what else is going to be on this album? Like, is it going to have enough bops for me? Ultimately, I didn't go and get it, but when I did see it in my local library, I did borrow the CD, and I may have ripped one or two of my favourite songs from there. So
just one or two?
I cherry-picked my favourite from the Simply Deep album, and I ripped those. Very naughty of me. Don't report me to Kelly, guys, please.
Naughty in the noughties.
So I had a few favourites, definitely, from Simply Deep.
Can I guess?
Yes, please.
This is my number one standout, and I think it's one of your favourites. Past 12?
Yes. Oh, we're so in sync. That is number one on my list, Past
12.
What
a banger.
Right?
This is like elegant night out with the girls R&B.
I met this guy. He was always on the floor, but he's dancing by himself. I don't know why, because he's looking hot to death. So I begin to think, if I go out on the floor, there's a chance he'll notice me. And when he did, it was on and popping sweet.
It's, you know, when Emma Bunton did We're Not Gonna Sleep Tonight, that kind of like ladies' night.
Hun's night out at Christmas.
Yes, Hun's night out at Christmas, New Year's Eve. This is Kelly's version of that.
Yeah, and this was the encore on the Simply Deeper tour.
That would be a fantastic encore. You can imagine the confetti's coming down. Everyone's a bit tipsy.
That is some strength to not release that as a single, considering like her background and being like an R&B star with the huge R&B girl band. It must have been really like, you know, okay, that's a move to not release it, but it's such a strong album track. Mm. And then maybe your girl Brandy pops up with this track Love Hate. Is that one of your standouts?
This was definitely one of my standouts. So yeah, Brandy had a demo or a reject that she didn't record from her Full Moon era. And this song, Love Hate, is written and produced with Brandy's husband at the time, Big Bird. Although I shouldn't say husband, I don't think they were ever formally married, but it's her partner, her baby daddy. So he's credited as the producer on this song as well. But I love Love Hate. Like, it was just so, it's just dark and moody, and the beats was just so hard and crunchy. Like, that's kind of what I wanted more from Simply Deep. You know, this was the time where Brandy's Full Moon was my favorite album ever. And I think I wanted Kelly's album to have a little bit more of that flavor. It's a shame it only materialized in one song, but hey.
Kelly, let him know. I'm so in love, I am so in hate, I just can't comprehend it. You getting me so high, you getting me so low, I can't show what I'm feeling. Never was the type to let someone like you get up under my skin. No, try like hell, but you didn't care for real. You stepped on my feelings.
And then what were your other standouts?
My one other standout for this album, I have to say, and obviously we'll talk about the singles when we get to them, is Haven't Told You.
Oh, okay, that's not on my list.
It's a really beautiful stripped back acoustic guitar kind of pop ballad. I love the simplicity of this song, and just Kelly's vocals sound absolutely gorgeous in this. Like, this is one for like, you know, you've made a meal for your partner, you've got the candles lit, you guys are sitting down having dinner. Like, this is very mood for that.
It happened so fast, not a part of my plan. Now I'm leaving my heart in your head. Whoa.
I told you just how much I love you. Just how much I love you, baby.
And what did you think of the title track with Solange?
I can't say it really spoke to my soul.
It's a nice title for the album, and I think I can see why it got put on, but they could have just kept the title and not kept the song. Even, like, as someone is like, I love Solange. Like, even, like, I love her first album.
Which and needs to be on streaming, by the way. Like, someone needs to. Is she embarrassed of it? Is that why, she's not really pushing for it to go up?
When I saw her live in 2012, she sung some of the, well, one song of the first
no
album.
No way. Wow.
I think Crush. I think some of the tracks are on streaming, but yeah, maybe not all of them. I've got it on CD, so don't worry.
Might need you to do a CD rip for me.
You can borrow it from my library.
Now, Joel, in this time, I was a budding Rolling Stone. And what I used to do back in high school was cut out interviews with my favorite artists and just glue them into my school diary pages. Casually opening my diary up in class and flicking the pages. Have you seen that Kelly interview?
I love that. I imagine if there was a world where we're in the same class, we'd be trying to one-up each other constantly, wouldn't we?
Have you seen what's in Joel's diary? He's got the new vitamin C interview in there.
Don't spread such vicious rumours about me, David. Yes, I loved it. And you definitely need to put that clipping on our Insta story when this episode drops. That was so sweet. And I just love that. I love all these throwbacks from your... I want next time you go home to Australia, you need to bring the whole archive home with you.
It's a wonder I got any schoolwork done.
Don't know how any of us did.
I think what was interesting was how crazy it was at that time in the world of Destiny's Child that she was talking about, obviously, Freddy versus Jason. She was already getting that promo in for her film debut. But also still talking about Destiny's Child, like, oh yeah, you know, Beyonce's doing Fighting Temptations and all three of us have recorded a song for the soundtrack called I Know. So it just seemed like it was buzzing and very busy in the world of Destiny's Child, even when they weren't officially on, so to speak.
What I love always is between the three of them, and hopefully it's not just put on, they just seem like they genuinely care for each other and it's always within each other's thoughts. I mean, even when recently Kelly Rowland released Coffee, Beyoncé posted it all on her Instagram and people were saying, we love how no one's a bigger Kelly Rowland stan than Beyoncé. Like, I love that about all three of them. They really seem like they're always in each other's hearts.
Exactly, yeah. And people can tell when it's genuine, and it seems like the three of them are genuinely friends and are very supportive of each other. And we got to stand that.
Mm.
Shall we do chart positions?
This album was a huge number one platinum selling album in my very own homeland, the United Kingdom.
Wow.
I mean, that's huge. That is huge. It was, and it makes sense why she does a European tour. And in the US, it peaked at number 12, gold selling album, still very respectable. And in your homeland, David, Australia, number 5, gold selling album again.
Amazing.
This is her best selling album to date. So hats off, or hats on to her, as we should say.
If only this episode was interactive, and then we can, like, you know, people can hover their mouse and like a picture of Kelly with a hat would appear.
Yeah. If this was a magazine, it would come with a free beret.
Or like a, you know, cream coloured Baker Boy hat, as Kelly likes to favour.
Oh, yeah.
I used to have those back in the day.
Oh, la la.
Obviously inspired by Calendria.
So, David, let's talk about Kelly's next single, Can't Nobody.
Yes. Went out and bought this on CD single, because I don't know if we must have mentioned it in the past, but I have this thing where I don't buy the big singles in an album. I always buy like the second or third, the ones that I feel like the artist really needs my support, like when they really need me to show up for them.
Limmy's there
for my faves. Limmy's there. He'll hand over that $4.99 for that CD single at HMV in Melbourne. So I went out and got Can't Nobody after seeing it on Video Hits.
Done. Mum, get me to HMV.
I'm supporting my girl Kel. This is the record I'm coming for.
And the music video, to me, it kind of feels like Dilemma's like cool older sister.
I think it actually was done by the same director who did Dilemma as well, which might explain why visually they were so in sync.
It's gorgeous, though. It works.
Gorgeous. And every time I think about this song, I can never get that image of her in that white dress out of my head with all the strings hanging down it. Like, that was couture. I don't know who the designer of that dress is. Probably Tina Knowles. But I was obsessed. And I think it must have been like within a year or two from seeing that video, I went back to Malaysia with my family. I saw these short shorts that had strings hanging down the side. And I instantly said to Mum, I was like, I have to buy them.
And did you?
Yeah, I did. Every time I go strutting down the street, the bits of string would just swing from side to side. And I was like, yes, I'm in the Can't Nobody video.
Oh, wow.
Ugh.
So, Can't Nobody, this bloody bop, another top 5 hit here in the UK. We were living for everything this girl was throwing right at us. In your homeland, David, number 13 in Australia, you didn't put enough work in. You need to be showing your little clippings to everyone a bit
more. Need to really be out there and be proactive as a Rolling Stone, I did.
You're not on that street team, darling, are you? I just know it.
Sadly not, no.
And then in the US, number 97. Right, but we know how the US charts are, and to be on the Billboard Hot 100 with what is your third single from an album, really, if you include Dilemma, that's still pretty good.
Yeah, and I feel like maybe at this time, you know, the momentum from the album and from Dilemma is starting to wane a little in the US. So I think they were already very, like, Europe-focused, maybe, for Kelly at this point.
Yeah, and, you know, when she's doing that heavy promo in Australia for both this album and the next album, That guy on Rove, is he the one presenter you guys have in Australia? Because I see him on everything I watch.
Yeah, he is like the late night show host in Australia, Rove. He's very well loved. I think he's retired now. I'm not sure what he's doing, but especially in the noughties, it was very prominent. His show was the one you wanted to go on. He always gets like a really good rapport with Kelly, and she's been on that show at least three times. She just loves him.
Now, I mentioned this because last time you were on, you introduced me to your favourite taste sensation of ice cream with French fries.
Yes.
Have you, in your current travels, tasted anything as remotely as exciting?
No, I was younger then. And, you know, instead of things staying up, they're starting to fall down. So you can't eat ice cream as much with French fries as much as you, you know. Oh, man, I miss that. I'd have that every day.
That's heartbreaking to hear that.
Oh, trust me, you think it's heartbreaking. You try putting on your favorite pair of pants and they're like, it's because of ice cream and French fries.
Well, I will never eat it again, and I'm sorry I brought it up now.
I think that's the biggest joy for me in this episode as a whole, is how lovely and wonderful and funny and kind Kelly is in her interviews. It's a side that I didn't know of, and I feel it's a side that they didn't show her correctly on The X Factor. You know, we didn't get to see that side of her as much. So I've really loved just seeing the human side of Kelly Rowland. You know, always admired her as a talented performer, but didn't know that side of her at all.
She was made for TV, really. And like you said, The X Factor, you know, probably doesn't really do her justice, because maybe the producers wanted like one type of performer as a judge. Like, they maybe wanted her to be more extra. No shade to Nicole Scherzinger, but you know what Nicole gives as a judge on The X Factor, that really extra moments. Like, maybe they wanted that out of Kelly, and it's just a little too one-dimension for our girl, Kel.
Yeah, everyone plays those one-dimensional roles on The X Factor, for sure. So, August 2003, we have Kelly Rowland taking on the big screen in Freddy vs. Jason.
This was such a moment in time in the noughties where I felt like all my pop faves were doing horror reboots. Like, that was a thing. Vitamin C did Dracula 2000, and then now my girl Kelly Rowland. Obviously Brandy had I still know what she did last summer, so I'm really picking up a theme here.
Yeah, I think, well, the thing is, Scream redefined the horror franchise, and they were such pop culture go-to. So if you're a significant person in pop culture, you wanted to be in a big horror movie. Mandy Moore was meant to be in a film, Crush, from Wes Craven, the director of Scream, and Kevin Williamson, the writer of Scream. And that film was tarnished with so much stuff going on. It was shooting for about 5 years. So she was in it at the beginning, and then it got reworked so much that by the time it got released, she wasn't in it anymore. I think Aaliyah was meant to be in it as well, God rest her soul.
Oh, that's crazy. And let's not forget Aaliyah did Queen of the Damned,
which I still need to see.
Maybe they just kind of, from like a movie producer's eyes, they're like, oh, these pop stars have a young audience and a following. They would be the ones who go and watch these movies. So we need to get these pop girls in there and doing it.
And of course, Jennifer Love Hewitt, main pop girl, main actress.
Yes.
And she has a song on the I Still Know What You Did Last Summer soundtrack. And you know, in a way of like, if someone has a teen film, they'll have a big song in it. But very rarely does someone do it for a horror film.
Well, Freddy vs. Jason didn't have Kelly on the soundtrack, did they?
Did not have Kelly on the soundtrack. I think it's too jarring when a pop girl's on a horror soundtrack, personally.
Yeah, what are you going to sing? It's just like, you can't put Train on a track in...
I'm so scared of you, please don't get me.
The JB horror themed EP coming next.
JB would get away with it. So this was a huge film. I mean, this is the two of the biggest horror franchises ever merging into one film. And Kelly has a big role in it. And what a part to have for your big cinematic debut. Obviously, there's that one problematic line that does the rounds, but it was a different time. And I like to think that Kelly is a big LGBTQIA plus ally. So I think we can all learn and grow. Mm. And I don't think that would ever have been her intention.
Mm. 100%, I agree. But what a big moment for her to, off the back of having a Grammy earlier that year with Dilemma.
Literally, because she's still rocking the red streak. She's not losing it for a film role, you know.
Yeah, she didn't do a Nicole Kidman in the Hours. Like, it was, you want it, Kelly Rowland? You signed for Kelly Rowland? You're getting Kelly Rowland.
You know, she doesn't need to do all that. You know, she doesn't need to lose herself. The red streaks are versatile. Because honestly, as well, if you sat there and saw something other than the red streaks, you'd want your money back, wouldn't you? So just as someone that, like, as a kid and a teenager and in my early 20s loved horror films, so that was something I was so excited to see, because I mean I was really young when it came out, but I had to see it, and maybe that's for the better or worse, but anyway, that's there for another day. But absolutely loved it. Have you seen Freddy versus Jason, David?
No, I still have not seen it to this day. Random clips online, but
do you know what, Nick, when we can finally get together, that's our double bill: Dracula 2000 with the VC and Freddy versus Jason with Kelly.
Iconic.
And then she follows that up with, slash around the same time, she releases the fourth single off of Simply Deep, Train on a Track.
Now, this one is a beautiful, breezy pop ballad, and it's very much a highlight on my breezy pop playlist, which...
David, you need to stop plugging your own playlists on this podcast. Everyone, if you don't know, we have playlists to go with every episode. So just search right back at you on Spotify. Obviously, listen to our episodes first, which you'll get up on Spotify, but you'll also get an account with playlists on it and listen to all our playlists to go with each episode. And then when you're done with all of that... go and listen to David's playlists, which are incredible. And as I always say, you are my playlist guru, so you have something to match every mood or whatever I'm needing.
That was Joel trying to be very Matthew Knowles about this whole episode, like trying to manage the group project. Make sure you buy the Destiny's Child records. And then if you've got spare cash, go get Train on a Track.
So this song is, yeah, it's gorgeous, but very fourth single. It's kind of like a quiet, subtle release. Everyone's already got the album. This song featured on not only the Seat Filler soundtrack, which is yet to come, but also Made in Manhattan.
I remember seeing this mentioned in the soundtrack. I was like, get it, Kelly. Have to say, love the music video that was shot in Sydney. You know, normally people think of Australian beaches as being very hot and very picturesque. She must have picked like quite an overcast day, because it looked quite cold.
Yeah, I mean, if this was released in September, say it was shot a few months before, that is your winter in Australia, isn't it? I have watched all of Home and Away, and I was expecting a sunny beach.
Who fucked up the schedule?
I bet Beck Cartwright never has to put up with this.
Let me call my future best friend, Delta Goodrum.
Yeah. Oh, babe, look, they get you to do some weird shit in the winter months when you come to Aussie. I'm so sorry you had to put up with that. So, speaking of Australia, the producer of this song did describe it as more in the vein of Natalie Imbruglia.
I wonder if Kelly knows who Natalie Imbruglia is.
Yeah, of course she does. She lives on planet Earth.
She has the internet. She's got eyes.
She doesn't have Excel, but...
she has Google. Google is free. And she must have come across Natalie Imbruglia at some point on the internet.
Okie dokie. So this song respectably charted for a fourth single. Number 20 in the UK. I'd happily have 20 in the UK and 61 in Australia. You didn't go out and buy it, David, did you?
No, I didn't. I spent my money on Can't Nobody and that was it.
Your mum and dad said, that's enough for the year.
The single also made number 21 in Scotland and number 44 in Ireland. So a moderate European hit there.
So also around this time, Kelly embarked on her debut solo tour, the Simply Deeper Tour in Europe. Those tour dates were across September and October 2003. Now, do you know what I love about this tour, David, is that Solange was the support act of this tour.
Wow.
So she toured venues like the Hammersmith Apollo, you know, big, respectable, but not huge venues for someone with a first album, you know. I have no recollection of this tour. I don't remember seeing or hearing about it. So I was fascinated when I heard about this.
Anyone out there who's gone to this tour, like, please let us know what it was like.
I'd love to have gone to it.
She basically did the album and there's a short Destiny's Child medley.
Yeah, very short.
Emotions and Bootylicious. So
I mean, she was the lead vocalist of Bootylicious, so you would, wouldn't you?
I thought she would have done like something more fun, like Say My Name, Survivor, you know, the big bangers, but it probably wasn't the mood of the set list. It wasn't a simply deep mood, was it?
Yeah. So she finished up the tour and then they probably all, you know, got together over Christmas and decided to reunite Destiny's Child.
2004 was such an incredible year. It was my final year in high school and we had heard rumours of Destiny's Child coming back. And, you know, by the time sort of late 2003, well into the first half of 2004, it was very like Beyoncé, Dangerously in Love season. So I was very much preoccupied with that. And I wasn't even thinking a Destiny's Child reunion could come back so quickly.
Oh my God. It was huge. They left Survivor. The Survivor era felt like peak Destiny's Child. And then in such a short time, it felt like they came back and then were just like mature already with just such a short break. It felt like a legacy album and tour and moment and era.
My first time hearing Lose My Breath was actually at a fish and chip shop. My dad parked his car, sent me outside to order the fish and chips. And in between, you know, I was waiting in the shop. I was like, oh, it must be a new Beyoncé record because I recognized Beyoncé's voice. And then verse two came on. I was like, that kind of sounds like Kelly. So, but I wasn't sure. I still think it was a Beyoncé record. And then when Michelle's verse came on, I screamed.
Raspy signature vocals.
I ran out to the car where my dad was. I was banging on the window. I was like, Dad, turn up the radio. It's Destiny's Child. It's Destiny's Child. They're back. So he, as it so happens, he was listening to the same radio station, very oblivious to what was happening.
So do you have fish and chips like the same? Is it the same as our fish and chips?
Yeah.
I thought that was just British. I didn't realise it was a. Is it a big thing in Australia?
Yeah. Yeah, fish and chips is international, honey.
Oh, that's good news. When I'm doing Dance with the Stars Australia, I can get a cheeky fish and chips.
Love it.
And then it was Destiny's Fulfilled was such a clever choice, I think. And that tour was huge. I wish I'd gone. Did you go to that Destiny's Fulfilled tour?
No, I really, really wanted to. But I definitely got this on DVD, Destiny's Child Live in Atlanta. And I watch it like every couple of years and I still get my life from it.
Wow.
And what's amazing about this tour is Kelly has a solo. She does Bad Habit, which is also a solo on the album. It's not credited as featuring Kelly Rowland or anything like that, but when you listen to that album track, it's pure 100% only just Kelly.
How many times are you gonna apologize about the same thing? And how many times can I take you back when I'm not the one that's doing wrong?
So while we're talking about Destiny Fulfilled and loving it, we have to say it is during this tour in Europe that Destiny's Child announced that they were going to split up.
Very emotional. It's just emotions taking me over.
And our girl Kelly was the one who read out the statement. She said, this is the last time you would see us on stage as Destiny's Child. And the group put out a statement afterwards saying we've been working together as Destiny's Child since we were 9 and touring together since we were 14. After a lot of discussion and some deep soul searching, we realized that our current tour has given us the opportunity to leave Destiny's Child on a high note, united in our friendship and filled with an overwhelming gratitude for our music, our fans and each other. So
And that amazing World Music Awards performance with Rihanna.
A-Marie.
And
Tiara Marie.
Doing that amazing tribute to Destiny's Child. Like, that's so iconic.
It's so iconic. Like,
is the World Music Awards still a thing?
I'm not sure.
Can we host the World Music Awards? That would be so good.
Listen, honey, we charted number 68 on the Australian Apple podcast chart.
How's that for world for you?
Thank you to everyone who listened to our Bardo episodes, including the interview one. I'm guessing that's why we charted in my homeland. I certainly didn't go out and do a promo tour, so...
I did. I've been on Rove. I've been on Carl and Jackie O. So, yeah, we peaked at number 68 on the iTunes Australia Music podcast charts, which sounds ridiculous and silly, but we are beyond thankful for that. And huge thank you again to Belinda and Katie for doing an interview with us. Any other noughties pop stars, give us a call. But yeah, it was wonderful. You know, that wasn't ever our aim, but it naturally happened and we were beyond happy to chat to them. And we want to tell more stories and hear more stories if you want to chat to us.
Absolutely. Yeah. I don't know how we went from talking about Destiny's Child splitting to us like segueing to plugging our charts. I guess in this section, we don't have chart positions to read, so we're reading our own.
We're currently 1,000 million and two in the UK.
Bubbling under. So I think that's kind of the highlight of 2005, the touring with Destiny's Child. And before the end of 2005, Kelly had a feature on Trina's track, Here We Go.
You know what? I'm too fly for this shit. You playing yourself.
Here we go again. Now you're telling me that she is just a friend. And why she calling you at 3 o'clock in the morning? I can't take this no more. No, no, no. Here we go again.
And that peaked in the US at number 17 and in the UK at number 15. And I think, I might be wrong, but I think they gave Trina her highest chart stats at the time.
I'm very surprised by these chart positions. So shout out to Here We Go.
But did you know this song?
I did. I love this song. Yeah. It's on my Boy Bye playlist.
Did Jennifer Ellison ever make it onto it?
No, Joel, it didn't quite fit. But thank you for your suggestion.
The song is called Bye Bye Boy.
He's so crushed and disappointed, guys. Like, he couldn't get Jennifer Ellison on my playlist. Like.
Disgusted. And even better in 2005, you know what's coming, David. Kelly released the cinematic classic, the Right Back At Ya movie, The Seat Filler, starring not only Kelly Rowland, but as she's billed on the trailer, Melanie Brown.
We've got two members from two of the biggest girl groups in history together in one film. Kelly as the lead, she plays a pop R&B singer called Janelle, and Mel B as her spicy best friend, full of sassy one-liners.
And it features the song Follow Your Destiny. It's very like Ali performing on SNL with Why Did You Do That, which is, in my opinion, the best song in A Star Is Born, even though they dub it as the bad song in the film.
I remember when we both sat down when we were still living together and we watched this. It was a hoot. What a rom-com to just chill out with wine to. Like, it's just amazing. So we do get a little bit more of a lull now after Seat Filler's out in 2005 until Kelly's comeback single, the big comeback single in March 2007, Like This. She did work all through 2006 on her second album, which was going to be called My Story at that time. And from her account, it was quite heavy with ballads and mid-tempos. And she somehow halfway through the process decided, no, it's too heavy. Like, I don't want to do anything like this. You know, I want to mix it with more up-tempo. So she went back to the drawing board, and that's why there was a little bit of a break. But here we are in March 2007. She's back with Like This, one of the newer bangers that she recorded for her second album. And I was so excited for this, Joel. Like, this was such a ladies' night anthem. And it was, I did not realize I needed this from Kelly until she gave it to us.
Told y'all I was gonna bump like this. Y'all didn't think that I could bump like this. Said I told y'all I was gonna bump like this. Turn around and I make it jump like this. You wanna keep that boy and make it jump like this. Y'all didn't think that I could make it bump like this. See, I told y'all I was gonna jump like this. How you not gonna know it when it...
This video is hot.
Kelly Rowland invented live stream parties.
It is so much better than I remember.
I love that she went with a female rapper as well, because it really went with the energy of the song. You know, ladies, drama, leave it home. If he ain't got it right by now, then scratch him off. Like, ew, I just love the lyrics. And this was around the time where there was stuff about her breaking off her engagement with her fiance. And I remember, like, people say, oh, the lyric where she goes, the ring, let it go about 3 months ago. Now they say miss before they mention my name. I was like, yes, Kelly. This is the equivalent of the revenge dress.
Okay, so this song was a welcome return to Ms. Rowland, or Ms. Kelly, should I say, as a soloist. And it peaked at number 30 in the US, number 4 in the UK, and number 13 in Australia. So just shows that the UK is here loving it. And everyone else needs to pay a bit more attention.
And also I have to say, like, an iconic live performance of Like This in this era is the BET Awards. If you've not seen it, it's the one with Beyoncé doing Get Me Bodied.
Yeah.
She pops up in this robot costume that was very clearly a ripoff of Kylie's Fever tour costume.
She's thinking, no one's going to know that in the States. I'm just going to go for it.
Exactly. But the internet has receipts, honey. Us gays are everywhere and online.
It's like all of us saying Billy did the red PVC suit first at the Smash Hits Award before Britney did it with Oops, I Did It Again.
So Beyoncé comes out, does Get Me Bodied, and then, you know, please welcome on stage Kelly Rowland. And Kelly comes out with her troupe of female dancers doing Like This. And in the final bit before the song ends, they go, told ya I was gonna boom. And, like, Kelly pops up on stage, Beyoncé pops up on stage, Michelle pops up on stage, Solange pops up on stage.
Yes, and they all dance.
Iconic.
What a finale. Also, I love them just, you know, including Solange in there. Like, fuck it. So, following that smash lead single, she might not need to call it My Story, but that's because she is Ms. Kelly. She releases her second solo album, Ms. Kelly.
I definitely spent much more time listening to Ms. Kelly than I did with Simply Deep. I think in my mind, like, this is what the record label wanted the first Kelly Rowland album to be, like a little bit more R&B focused.
I think she excels when she's a modern day dance floor diva. And I just think both her albums have lacked that this far. It's still very quite, yeah, it's more R&B, but it's still quite mid-tempo for me. And I guess maybe it's because I know the version that we're about to get into, but that original version of Work sounds so demo-y.
I know, I can't listen to that original version of Work now. Even though that was the first version I got into from the album, as soon as the Freemasons remix come out, which, you know, is the version, the definitive version that everyone knows, you can't go back, can you?
No.
You know, I spent a lot of time with this album and I do love a lot of parts of it. I would have to say it's almost a no-skip album for me.
Really?
Yeah, except maybe three tracks we could do without, but...
Listening to it, it sounds like, okay, this is more of an arrived body of work and consistent and complete. But for me, it felt like it missed something that we're about to tap into.
Well, this era with Ms. Kelly was the kind of birthplace of the kind of dance diva that we know and love her for. But for me, as a Kelly fan, I've always liked her doing R&B as well as dance. I know this is going to be a conflict in the kind of future of her solo records to come, but I think it's a good problem to have.
Oh, God, yeah.
It's a great problem to have, but it's not something that can be simplified with one album because you really can't combine the two. And she tries it with Here I Am, the third album, but I don't know. It's this kind of yin and yang is something we're going to see in Kelly's career moving forward. But this, at this juncture, we weren't aware of what's about to happen as yet. You know, she's just focusing on giving you a very US R&B fronted market. Because, you know, bear in mind, Simply Deep didn't do that well in the States. It was okay, but people didn't really pay attention. So it feels like this time she's leaning very much into that space and hoping that the fans there respond, the fans that love Destiny's Child there would respond. If I may, let's maybe touch on Comeback, which is produced by Scott Storch, who did Cater to You for Destiny's Child and, you know, worked with Paris Hilton, etc.
Jessica Simpson,
Fired Up, shout out to that track. For me, this was like one of my very early favorites on the album, that kind of laser cut beats. Like, it's just, you can just imagine this being like a really hot show opener with all the laser lights, and she comes up on stage and yeah.
I got that comeback, that other butter. I got that run back, run back and tell your mother. I thought it rah, rah on them, put it all the way down.
Another track I wanted to point out is Love, which was written by Solange. Now, this is a savage breakup track, if I ever saw one. Like, it's got all the lines you just wish you could text to your ex. The same shoulder that was so cold now needs one to lean on. The same number that was so hard to call now is your favorite one. Like, Kelly, whoa. A revenge record, if we ever saw one. Like...
payback.
So what's your backup plan? Move on to a better man. Same friends who told you to leave have all tried to get at me. Same mama who told you I was no good forgot to tell you love.
Oh, I don't want to go through all of this. Okay, fine. I'll just do one more.
One more.
Gots to Go featuring Da Brat, which was meant to be the lead single.
Good. I'm glad you brought that up. Because I was hearing it and I was like, Da Brat's on here? Amazing.
So Gots to Go was actually originally meant to be the lead single for this era. So the year before, in 2006, Kelly actually performed it at the MTV Asia Awards in Bangkok. You can go on YouTube. You can find that performance there. It looked like a really big budget performance. You know, she had lots of dancers on stage. They were all kind of dressed up as Barbie dolls.
Yes, and they used that Destiny's Child intro.
Yes. So it was a big production number. Kelly came out of a Kelly box.
Which suits like a doll. My story, you know, because that is my story.
By the time the Miss Kelly album came out, it was at the bottom end of the album and it wasn't considered to be a single anymore, which is fine, but, you know, we'll always have that moment.
Now don't you get mad, no. Why you look so sad? Still wish you was my man. Boy, don't you make me laugh. Never thought I could leave you. Had to take back the rest of me. Take back the best of me. No longer make believe. I tried to stay with you. You never worked it out. It came the strength to leave. Ladies, if you're family, stay. If you can't do this no more. Do this no more. Ladies, if you feel me, stay. Charge it to the game.
So, this album did really well in the States, peaked at number 6. Here in the UK, it peaked at 37. So, maybe there wasn't as much promo around it here, or maybe we didn't connect with it, considering how high Like This charted. And in Australia, number 44. Honestly, David. So, next up we're going to see is a US release only single called Ghetto, featuring the man himself, Snoop Dogg. Now, I know this man from a Pussycat Dolls song.
I love it. That's our entryway into it, you know. Snoop Dogg has, like, this incredible hip-hop career, and it's only through the Pop Girls feature that we're like, I'm listening.
Look, now what would a girl like you do with a G like me? You probably couldn't handle it. I pop a bottle and get a few candles lit, and now the scene is set as we sip on some more wet. Yeah, yeah.
Rock your tails, sag your chains, ice your grill. It's a
So it was a really big deal for Kelly to get Snoop on a record. It's something she really wanted for a long time. So this single was something she pushed. Although it wasn't officially released as a single, it was kind of a radio-only single from what I read. And we don't use the word urban anymore to describe music genres, but it was serviced primarily only to urban radio stations. And from what I can tell, it really didn't get much love. There was a music video shot for it, and it was okay,
yeah.
But, you know, it's nothing to write home about, so...
No, but it has lovely vocals from Kelly on it, like really lovely vocals, and she looks stunning in that video.
Very stunning. I've never really liked this particular song.
We've got it. Maybe this is our song. You know how there's one every episode that we don't hugely love, and then by the time the edit and the episode comes out, one of us has changed our minds about it. Maybe this is the song. And then, worldwide, January 2008, Kelly Rowland releases Work, the Freemasons remix. Now, David, right? This is hot, H-A-W-T, exclamation point, right? And all it takes sometimes is one song to do everything for a career. And I'm not saying she needed it, but it did do it. This, right, is a career-defining song. It is a guaranteed crowd-pleaser and floor-filler.
Such a modern day classic. And really, this was the birthplace of not only Kelly Rowland, the dance diva that we will come to see and know and love, but also Kelly Rowland, the sex positive diva. You know, because the lyrics put it in, it's like, it's vulgar. But you know, Kelly gets away with it somehow. But this was the start of Kelly doing a more sexy repertoire, you know, and then we'll see it later in songs like Motivation and Ice and she go for it, honey. Like, we love a sex positive diva, and it's nice that we're at this point now, we're seeing the birthplace of all those incredible strands to Kelly Rowland's solo success, and it's here in this song. The Freemasons absolutely did a killer job with this. So from what we can tell, the UK label actually wanted the Freemasons to do it because of the success they had remixing Beyoncé's Deja Vu, which apparently charted better here than the original version. So they were like, okay, well, Kelly, what do you think? And she's like, oh, you know, they did such a good job with Deja Vu, let's go for it. But I don't think this is what they would have had in mind when they asked for a Freemasons remix. Like, the Bangra beats, it was so fresh and unexpected, wasn't it?
Everything they did to this song was so good. If it's done it tastefully and respectfully, when a song adds that world Middle Eastern vibe to it, it is fantastic. You know, Kiss Kiss, In My Pocket, Buttons, fucking fantastic. And the video is kind of like low budget-ish, but done so well.
It's simple and tasteful, and it looks club ready.
Yeah, it's actually kind of like a Saturday's video in a way. You know, with the lights and the positions.
Yes. Maybe Kelly was inspired by the Saturdays.
Well, I think probably even vice versa, because this came out even before they were around, you know.
Oh, yeah, true, true.
Would be
yeah.
heavily influenced on what they were about to do.
Did you say influenced?
Yes. No one questions Mariah Carey when she does things like that, David. So let me just say, this woman belongs on the dance floor. I think she could be and is in some ways in the modern day Donna Summer. It was disco then and it's dance now. She is a perfect match for it. I know she is gunning for a Donna Summer biopic, and I am so here for that. A big cinematic classic, you know, it could be a cinematic version of what Delta and Olivia did, and she can release an album of really tasteful covers to coincide with that, classy, tasteful, well-produced covers. She matches it so well.
Every single thing you've said there, I want, and I want it like yesterday.
I think Kelly does too. Like, you know, people need to get to work.
Put it in.
Development. Put it in development. I mean, she could get an Academy Award nomination for that if it's done right.
Shall we go chart positions?
So this song, big UK number 4 and number 6 in Australia. I can't believe the US have been deprived of this. Like, do you think they even really know it on the scale that we do, or even on a milliscale of the scale that we know it?
I want to know whether it was service to the clubs, maybe. Like, did it do something on the Billboard dance charts, perhaps? Because I can't seem to find any chart positions.
Me either.
So this was obviously a huge European hit for Kelly. So very deserved. Welcome back to Europe, Kelly. It was number 3 in Belgium. It was number 4 in France, number 4 in Finland, number 6 in Greece, number 3 in Turkey, number 6 in Italy.
And I know it kind of seems a bit drastic, but go with it. I would love to see Kelly team up with Sync the Pink and do a World Pride tour the way Mel C did.
Absolutely would.
I just think it could fit perfectly.
Yeah, that would be so fabulous. We would love to see it. Get Freemasons back on board. Whoever you want, really. Shall we go to the next single? Because we're almost at the end now, aren't we?
We are. So the next one is, again, another one that I didn't know about until research of this podcast, if I'm honest, is Daylight, which is Kelly Rowland featuring Travis McCoy. Do you know who or what a Travis McCoy is?
I do recognise the name from the Saturdays album and also Cheryl's album, but he's from Gym Class Heroes.
Yeah, Gym Class Heroes.
It's something the straights listen to that's on like mainstream
Very
radio.
Of the time.
Very off the time,
club.
Yes.
Straight club.
Yeah, maybe Staytime Radio. Like, I don't know. What.
Yeah, Lorraine. Oh, so you're in Gym Class Heroes. I can't do Scottish, sorry. Okay, so there's a lyric in this song, David. I don't know if you know what I'm about to say. The lyric in his rap goes, back in 3 days, like Paris's jail sentence.
Oh, could you think of a more 2008 thing to rap about?
I'm not cool with that. I am not cool with that.
No, but that's straight humour for you.
Mm.
That's het. That's het
humor,
humor,
if that's
for
what
you
call it. So this song.
Any Gym Class Hero fans? Sorry, guys, we didn't mean to go in so hard, but it wasn't funny.
They're gonna come for us.
The Travis McCoy hive.
And she said that she was nervous to work with this guy, and it's like, yeah, like great, you know, I'm sure he's fantastic at what he does, but you're a Destiny's Child. You're Kelly Rowland.
He should be nervous working with you.
Exactly. So this song charted at 14 in the UK and 43 in Australia. There's a mishmash of stuff going on. If you're a sort of just a general enjoyment occupier at the time, you don't really know what way things are going on or what's going on with this album and everything.
No. So Kelly decided that the Miz Kelly album was underappreciated. So she recorded and repackaged it as a Diva Deluxe EP, and then later as Miss Kelly Deluxe.
Which took off some of the old songs and slapped on some of these new songs. Quite a lot going on there, if I'm honest.
And she said that, I feel very confused by this, because I read one interview and she said that the fans wanted more up-tempos and more energy, but the new songs she added on there, apart from the work, they're not up-tempo, baby. Ow.
Yeah, exactly. Who knew you couldn't do up-tempo? Ow. And we know you can.
There are a couple of remixes on there, so I guess there is, like, you know, clubbier moments. But the new songs brought in are ballads. But with the re-release of Miz Kelly and off the back of Work doing so well, the album actually reaches a new peak in the UK. So the deluxe edition makes number 23.
Amazing. Yeah,
now that's
redemption.
The result. That is job well done, Kelly. But now, like, you can move on and do better things, you know?
Okay, so she is an international queen at this point. She pops up on two international singles in 2008 and 2009. We have No Future in the Past in France, which is Nadia and Kelly Rowland. Now, that is a very cool song. It's a banger and it has a really nice video, super like Y2K intergalactic aesthetic, which peaks at number 51 on the French airplay. I think Nadia and Kelly deserved more than that. And then she also had Breathe Gentle with
Tiziano
Ferreira. Number one on the Italian airplay charts and number two in their regular charts, and charted around Europe as well, I noticed. So. Wow.
So from that in 2008, things start to get a little bit, and we can probably tell from what happened with the Miss Kelly album and the re-release doing so-so, and then these random collaborations popping up. It seemed like her label doesn't quite know what to do with her. So it's unsurprising that at the top of 2009, word came out that Kelly has not only left Columbia Records, but she's parted ways with Matthew Knowles as her manager. So this is a fresh start for Kelly.
But she'll always be part of the Knowles
family. Yes, of course. So this is 2009 is a fresh start for Kelly. And what we're about to see in April is going to be a huge game changer for her and a massive career moment.
She comes back to reclaim her crown as queen of the dance floor. She comes back with David Guetta featuring Kelly Rowland, the signature bop banger filling up the clubs, apart from right now, When Love Takes Over. Is it Guetta or Guetta? I think I said Guetta.
Guetta.
Oh.
So this is such a classic, very much a song of the decade. When you think of the late noughties, like this is a really defining moment. You know, EDM music and dance music was slowly creeping in. And I would say this was on the precipice of it becoming a real mainstream trend moment. This is probably one of the earlier crossovers for dance music. You know, Kelly and David Guetta here really took it to new heights. And then next thing you know, everyone was trying to do what he's done with this, which is amazing. So the origins of When Love Takes Over is actually quite interesting. So in 2008 in summer, Kelly was in south of France, as you do when you're an international diva. She went to a David Guetta show and an instrumental of When Love Takes Over comes on, no vocals. And she was just like really moved by it. And, you know, that it, just something about it spoke to her spirit. So she went up to David Guetta afterwards and asked, you know, could I write some lyrics to that song? So he sent her the track. She goes back to London, teams up with the Nervo sisters, iconic Australian songwriting twins who did Rachel Stevens. So she sat down and wrote When Love Takes Over with these girls. And Kelly's label, because this is still in 2008, I guess she was still signed at that point. Kelly's label at that time wasn't feeling it.
I mean, imagine if that had been the follow-up to Work. That really would have, like, established something.
It could have just taken her career off in new ways.
You know what she needed to do with the Miss Kelly album? She needed to do a Shania Twain and release, like, an R&B version, a dance version, a pop version.
With guitars, you know, satisfy the Natalie.
Yeah, a rock version, you know. And that would have satisfied everyone. But, yeah, imagine what would have happened if she had followed up Work with this.
That would have been major and iconic. So it's a real loss for the label to park When Love Takes Over.
Yeah.
But David Guetta rediscovered it when he was putting together his fourth album. He was like, oh, this track, oh, it's actually quite good. So, you know, when it's right, guys.
But yeah, thank goodness that he came across it again.
Yeah. And honestly, Kelly's vocals are so fire on this track. Absolutely fire.
And literally, like, yeah, can you believe this song is 11 years old? Like, if this comes on the club now, like, still, like, living for it like it's a fresh track.
You know, Kelly was making history with this record. And I think it's like such a moment of vindication for her, you know, coming from departing her label, maybe feeling a little bit mishandled and misunderstood there. And then just like near the top of, you know, pretty much before summer of 2009, she's everywhere. She's literally top of the charts with this.
As you say, top of the charts. In the UK, this is a number one smash hit. Australia, number 6, and US, number 76. Very clever choice to have this as an April release, because then it is the song of the summer. And what a summer hit it is.
Absolutely massive. Like, this is a classic. So well done, Kelly. And you know, we feel very happy to leave this episode at this point, because it's a happy note to we've seen the origins of Kelly Rowland, the soloist, and we've seen some ups and downs, and you know, some stuff that you loved that I maybe weren't feeling as much, and vice versa. But we are united on this front of loving dance diva Kelly. And it's from this point onwards, we're just going to see more amazing solo material from Kelly, and with more confidence and more. She's really come into her own from this point out.
Modern day Donna Summer, and I am thirsty for that biopic and album. Cannot wait. And I would love to see her do a UK tour or a world tour. I'd love that. Or a club tour. Like, what a note to leave on. David, thank you for this suggestion. And look, guys, I am gutted that she did not get to do Birmingham Pride this year. But I want to get there and see it next year. So let's try and get a coach load together.
Yeah, let's do it. Team Kelly, let's hit up Pride.
Well, shall we wrap it up there? Yeah. Is there any more to say about Calendria?
No.
Look, Kelly, that was amazing. Guys, as always, let us know what your favourite and least favourite songs of this era are. Look, we've had a lot of people saying we missed out Saturday songs, and I'm sorry about that, but that's why you love them, and that's why we want you to let us know. So let us know if there's any Kelly album tracks or songs you've disagreed with our opinion on, or songs that we've not mentioned. Let us know.
You know, I want to hear from all the, you know, Rolling Stones out there. You know, please, like, I'm so thirsty to connect with other Kelly Rowland fans. Like, I saw this one account a couple of weeks ago tweeting their love for the Here I Am album. You know, if we had more time, we would definitely get into that era with Commander and Down for Whatever. Like, these are major bops that we would definitely be experiencing in Pride season. So get your appreciation on for Kelly Rowland if you've not thought about it. This is the time. We do have a playlist on Spotify of Kelly bops, which, you know, we'll link up in this episode.
And we might even put a few DC tracks from this era in if you're lucky.
Ooh.
But look, as always, and I will say it again, we are at RightBackPod on all socials. And you can email us rightbackpod@gmail.com. I am at Dr_Joel B. Give me a follow on all platforms. And he is
at Love Limmy.
He is the Carl to my Jackie O.
Oh my God. Stop it.
Look. David, do you think we'll get a Destiny's Child reunion after all this? Do you think they're Zooming and WhatsApping at the moment?
I really hope we get a Destiny's Child full-blown reunion. It's what the planet needs, and nothing would make my soul happier than to see that. I love all three ladies, and I'm so ready to stan.
Before you run off and grab your coffee, if you're enjoying what we're doing, please do give us a cheeky 5-star review. Oh, God, I hate it when people say cheeky, but I've done it. That's
you say it every episode.
And please do tell your pop-loving friends. Until then, we will see you next time. Stay safe, kiddos. Lots of love. Bye. I'm down for whatever. I'm down for whatever.